नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 3 टेक्स्ट 14 एंड 15। अहम् महेन्द्रो निरिति प्रचेता सोमोऽग्निरीश पवनो विरिञ्चि आदित्य विश्वे वसवोऽथ साध्या मरुद्गणा रुद्रगणास सिद्धा अन्ये च ये विश्वसृजो मरीषा ऋग्वादयो स्पृष्ट रजस्तमस्का यस्येहि तं न विदुस्पृष्ट माया सत्व प्रधानापि किं ततोऽन्ये। Yamaraj is continuing his exposition on his particular position vis-a-vis the position of Lord Krishna. And in these two shlokas, he is saying, as we read the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I, Yamaraj, Indra, the King of Heaven, Niriti, Varuna, Chandra, the Moon God, Agni, Lord Shiva, Pavana, Lord Brahma, Surya, the Sun God, Vishwasu, the eight Vasus, the Sadhyas, the Maruts, the Rudras, Siddhas, and Marichi, and the other great rishis engaged in maintaining the departmental affairs of the universe, as well as the best of the demigods headed by Brihaspati and the great sages headed by Bhrigu, are all certainly freed from the influence of the two base material modes of nature, namely passion and ignorance. Nevertheless, although we are in the mode of goodness, we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is to be said of others who under illusion merely speculate to know God? Purport. The men and other living entities within this cosmic manifestation are controlled by the three modes of nature. For the living entities controlled by the base qualities of nature, passion and ignorance, there is no possibility of understanding God. Even those in the mode of goodness, like the many demigods and great rishis described in these verses, cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, one who is situated in the devotional service of the Lord is transcendental to all material qualities. Therefore, the Lord personally says that no one can understand him but the bhaktas, who are transcendental to all material qualities. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. As stated by Bhishma Dev to Maharaj Yudhishthir in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.16, Nahiyasya karhichid rajan puman veda viditsitam yadvijijagyasaya yukta muyanti kavayopihi. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Shri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. No one therefore can understand God by speculative knowledge. Indeed, by speculation, one will be bewildered, muyanti. This is also confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 7.3. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam vetti tatvatah. Among many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And even among the siddhas, those who have already become perfect, only one who adopts the process of bhakti, devotional service, can understand Krishna. These two verses, they exactly coincide with something Lord Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 10.2 and 10.3, Lord Krishna says, Name vidu sura gana prabhavam namaharshaya aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvashah. Name vidu. The word vidu comes again here also. Yasya hitam na vidu. Vidu means can be known. Name vidu sura gana. Sur is the nomenclature for demigods. Demigods are defined as those who are devotees of Vishnu. Demons are not described. Demons are only described as those who are not devotees of Vishnu. Just like darkness has no description, but light has description. Light is not absence of darkness. Light is a positive thing. Something happens. Similarly, those who abide by the rules and the laws of God, they are called the demigods. So we'll take the Bhagavad Gita verses first. Name vidu sura gana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adirhi devanam. I am in all respect the origin of these demigods and maharshis. So the acharyas raise the point that the devatas are sometimes seen as addicted to wine, women, money, power. They engage in politics, they fight. But the maharshis, they are not seen as this category of people. So it could be that the demigods, because of their absorption in material affairs, they cannot understand Krishna as he is. But the maharshis are pious people. What is their problem? So Krishna is saying, no. If you are engaged in sense gratification, that's for sure you won't know me. And if you are not engaged in sense gratification, that is still no guarantee. He clarifies that in the next verse by saying, Yo mamajam anadim chavetti loka maheshwaram asammoodo samartyeshu sarva papai pramuchyate. Yo mam ajam anadim loka maheshwaram. Three specific qualities Lord Krishna mentions in 10.3. It is interesting to note that Krishna is describing the living entity also as ajam. The soul is described as na jayate, same meaning. The soul has no birth. And the soul is also described as anadim. There was never a time when this was not existing. In one sense, only Lord Brahma can be called Aja because he has no material father and mother. He is born from a lotus flower. So Aja is the name of Lord Brahma. And Aja also could be Anadim. Of course, he has Krishna as his origin. But certainly Aja is not Loka Maheshwaram, the supreme control of all universes. So unless someone is freed from sin, he cannot understand Krishna. In a small textbook, Elevation to Krishna Consciousness, which has just a few collection of Prabhupada's lectures, Prabhupada raises a very significant point. He says, what is the problem if someone thinks that I am happy in what I am doing in this world and the Lord is happy with what he is doing, so both of us can mutually exist with no problems. But how do we want to exist in this material world? Do we want to exist with problems? Do we want to exist with frustrations, anxiety, sorrows. No. What we want is happiness. What we want is beauty. What we want is sublime qualities. So where do they exist? Until material society convinces us that there could be a chance that we can find these qualities here in this soil, there will be this vain search for these superior things in this atmosphere. Like a person who is searching something under a street light, and another person comes trying to help him and says, "Did you lose something?" He said, "Yes, my gold wristwatch." He said, "Oh, that means a gold wristwatch is a very expensive thing. This poor person must be feeling very sad." So he says, "Let me help you." So the street light is not like a football field, it's a small area. So after 5 minutes, this person says, "Well, we have covered almost everything. Do you know where exactly you lost it?" He said, "Yes, under that tree over there in that park." So he said, "If you lost it under that tree, what can you gain by searching it under a street light here?" He said, "But it's all dark there. You can't see even if you want to search something. Even if it is dark, you have to find it in that place only, because that's where you lost it." Similarly, spiritual life may be seen very dark. Spiritual life may be seen as, who knows whether it works or not? Who knows whether someone can teach it or not? And surprisingly, the scriptures say, don't stay in darkness, come to the world of light. So this is another puzzling thing, that sense enjoyers feel that this world is full of light and spiritual life is dark. There is no way you can understand it. And the Vedas say that this is a world of darkness and that is a world of light. So therefore, Prabhupada says in that lecture, if at all you want good qualities like beauty, happiness, freedom from distress, you have to come to spiritual life. Because these are all ideals. They can never be realized in the material world. They may appear for some time. So one thing which Lord Krishna does regularly, as we just sang in the Brahma Samhita, Rama Adimurti Shukala Niyamena Tishthan. Ram Adi Murtishu, incarnations like Lord Ramchandra, Niyamena Tishthan. These incarnations come regularly. An incarnation, carne is a Greek word for flesh. It means to take flesh, to become flesh. So incarnate. It's a very different thing when you say incarnation in English and avatar in Sanskrit. Incarnation makes you feel that, oh, something which was impersonal has now taken form in flesh. But avatara is somebody who has come down. Ava is to come down. And tara is to cross over. So Krishna's avatars are not just some simple, although he is described as a natta, as an expert actor who does many, many fabulous things. But he doesn't become flesh. He takes a body which looks like yours and mine, but still it is not like yours and mine. And therefore, in one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Janma karma cha me divyam. Divyam. Divyam word, divi, also means brilliant. we have this word divas or din. So divi or divya loka, it means brilliant, not of tamasa, not of darkness. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada makes a very poignant observation. No one can understand why this Supreme God comes to earth as an ordinary human being and executes such wonderful, uncommon activities. That is the bottom line. No one can really understand. Unless Krishna himself begins to explain. Many times he doesn't also. He doesn't explain why he is doing certain things. Is it unnatural to have this kind of situation where something cannot be known by anyone? It's a daily occurrence. No one can point out the sun without the sun itself making himself visible. The sun comes up and says, here I am like this. Throughout history, nobody is able to show that, okay, the sun is not visible, and he puts a torchlight, here it is. That's not possible. So it's a very simple thing. It's a daily occurrence. As Kartik is fast approaching, we sing the Damodarashtakam, where we describe the glories of Lord Damodar, how he was being bound by the ropes of Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda saw that Krishna is becoming more and more naughty every day, especially with this habit of stealing butter, breaking the pots. So she decided to bind him to a mortar. As she brought a rope, she put the mortar in front, then Damodar in front, and as she tried to bind it, she found the rope short. So what do you do when you have a rope which is short? You add another one. So she added another one. That too became two fingers short. She added another one and another one. And then somebody tried to see from the window as to what Mother Yashoda is doing. And she offered help. Can I help? She said, yes, bring some ropes. Finally, all the ropes. Now, ropes are not uncommon. If you go to somebody's house and say, can you give me a rope? He says, rope? What for? But in a cowherd community, everybody has cows. They have ropes everywhere. They use a arrangement of a ropes to stack those pots. So rope is not a common thing. Like a mobile phone is not a very uncommon thing nowadays, right? Everybody has one. So every house has ropes. So she got all the ropes. It looked like a rope shop was opened in Yashoda's palace. And all the ropes tied together, still it was two fingers short. Now this could be some magical thing happening, but Vishwanath Chakravartipad explains that the small black thread which was put on Damodar's waist just a few months ago with this tiny silver bell, that was already there. So it is not that suddenly Krishna had some problems and that rope could not be tied. Just a few days ago, a black thread with a bell, it's an auspicious thread which is tied on babies' waists to keep them away, to ward off evil spells, omens, ghosts and witches, that was already there. Now how do we explain that? That could be bound and this cannot be bound. So these kind of uncommon activities, they are full of this divyatva. And therefore, anyone who tries to understand them, now understanding doesn't mean explaining them in full. Understanding means basically hearings submissively from authorities. As we were describing about Lord Ramchandra's activities, Lord Ram is Vishnu himself. And it is described how when he lost Sita Devi, he was lamenting like an ordinary man who lost his wife. And Lord Shiva and Parvati were going through that area on a plane, and Lord Shiva bowed down in that direction. And Parvati said, "What happened? Whom did you see here that you offered your pranams?" He said, "I am amazed by seeing the pastimes of my Lord and Master." She said, "Who is your Lord and Master?" "This person who is shrieking, howling like a common person." He said, "Yes." "And he lost his wife." "Yes, he lost his consort just a few hours ago." So Parvati Devi, she is powerful. Srishti, Sthiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shakti, Reka. She can do all these things. Srishti, Sthiti, Pralaya. She is Durga. She descended. And from a corner, she just wanted to just appear right in front of Lord Ram. Hoping that if I take the form of Sita, let us see how he comes to me, and maybe he is so happy, or he may embrace me, he may lose his sorrow. So since she is powerful, she is just the other counterpart of the original Devi. She took the form of Sita, exactly like Sita. And she came before Lord Ram. And just like there is a nice concert going on, there is a tabla, pakhavaj, sitar, and suddenly the power goes off. So Lord's Leela is like a nice concert going on, and suddenly due to the appearance of Parvati Devi there, Lord Ramchandra just made his demeanor very serious, and he said, "Mother Parvati, what are you doing here? Please accept my pranams." And she said, "How could he see through this mask, see through this disguise?" And she realized that he is also my master. So it is not that he has forgotten his post. He is just relishing a kind of leela, a kind of ras. So in the Ramayana we find Lord Ramchandra like an ordinary king, administrator or a diplomat. But the ideal one, ideal king, ideal diplomat. Simultaneously, he can be the ideal son, ideal warrior, ideal husband. But once, when the plan to conquer Lanka has reached a dead end, they have reached the southern shore of the Indian subcontinent. And Hanuman and his team, one of the four teams which was sent to scout for the exact location of Mother Sita, they have pointed out south. That's the way we have to go. As they approach the tip of the subcontinent, they find the vast ocean in front of them. Now what to do? So the monkeys, they can jump. And these monkeys are not ordinary monkeys. In fact, when Ravana, who started his atrocities, out of just vanity, just pride, he had begged the boon from Lord Brahma that no living entity can harm me. And he mentioned almost all these great personalities. The daityas, the other danavas, demigods. Somehow, human beings and monkeys and others that slipped the list, didn't make it. And Ravana thought, no big deal. I can have them for my breakfast. He used to eat human flesh, drink human blood. So suddenly, monkeys are not seen as a menace that they can conquer a like such a big person who is so austere, who is so powerful, or whose austerities have made him so powerful. So when the demigods were very, very, very troubled they begged Lord Vishnu for assistance, and he said, "Don't worry. Now my plan is, all of you should go and take birth in and around Ayodhya." So these monkeys came down, and they were born. I mean, they grew big as soon as they were born, and they are described as huge. They can rip a mountain peak with their bare hands. Of course, they were programmed in such a way that they won't cause any menace until Lord Ramchandra appears. So these monkeys were thinking of jumping, but not everybody could make it. Some were saying, "We can make it, but we can't make it back." So then Lord Ramchandra, as an ideal king who always has his ministers — the word for minister in Sanskrit is mantri, those who give mantrana, those who can give good advice. So they said, "What about a bridge?" "Bridge? Impossible. How can you build a bridge with the raging ocean?" Since we are on the subject of the Lord's uncommon activities, suddenly, all of a sudden, Lord Ramchandra just gets up and he says, "Hey ocean god, if you don't allow me passage through your waters, I am going to dry you up." Now, just a few hours ago, this person was talking with his council as to what is to be done, what is not to be done. It's not likely that something like this could happen. So the ocean god didn't even take notice. So Lord Ramchandra, he said, "What do you think? You think I'm an ordinary mortal that I can't do it?" And he closed his eyes and did a avahan, made a request for the Brahmastra. Now when things started really getting hotter, the Brahmastra arrived, and then Lord Ramchandra opened his eyes. Now people get angry. People can get really angry. That's a fact. You can get so angry that your blood may boil or your eyes may be fiery red. And there are people trying to teach you how to control your anger. There are books on anger management. But you can't have somebody so angry that he may make a glass of water boil. But when Lord Ramchandra opened his eyes, the ocean began to boil. People had not seen, the monkeys and the warriors had not seen such kind of aquatic creatures. Huge whales, sea serpents. And these creatures, they lie peacefully in the lowermost depths of the ocean. Their bulk is so big, they can't even come up. They preferred doing whatever they can at such a... Like nowadays, scientists have found out that the atmospheric pressure at the depth of the ocean is so much that if a human being goes without protective suit, his blood vessels may burst. But at that depth too, there are aquatic creatures who eat, sleep, dance, be merry. They have no problem. So these creatures were thrown up in the air from the ocean. And the ocean began to have such a turmoil, everything was disrupted. This time, Samudra came to know that this is for real. I heard somebody shouting my name, but I thought, "I am the ocean, who can just challenge me like this?" But these demigods, they have one thing. At the back of their mind, they know that they are employees of someone. Just like if you work somewhere, your branch may be an outpost. Like in Goa, we go to a devotee, a Mahaprabhu. He is an electrical engineer for one electrical company. And he is the only employee most of the time. And he has assistants around him. His job is to see that electrical generation is not stopped. When it stops, he gets a call, he takes a cycle, goes to the factory, starts it, comes back. Now, how does he know that he's an employee? How does he know that he's not the owner of this whole thing? He doesn't try to sell it off to someone at a cheaper rate. No, because he knows that every month my paycheck comes. Every month I get a salary packet, I get an envelope. And that check signed by somebody actually realizes that money. So there is someone who is looking after my affairs. So similarly, the demigods, they may create so many miracles, they may kill someone, they may challenge even the established laws of nature. They may show something extraordinary. At the back of the mind somewhere, the idea is there that I'm not the real boss. Although I may like somebody calling me like that, if any of my faithfuls, they say, you are so great, you are so big, and they do aarti, I shower some blessings on them, whatever. But still I know that it is not me who does everything. So Samudra personified, came before Lord Ramchandra and said, my Lord, you have ordained my nature to be unfathomable and to be always volatile. I am still in some places, I am volatile, I am agitated, turbulent in some places, but that's what you have told me. These aquatics, they have no other shelter. So what's the point in showing your anger like this? So Lord Ramchandra thought that he still not understood the lesson. So then when Samudra actually surrendered and says, I'm sorry, you tell me whatever you wish, I'll do that. And then Lord Ramchandra orders, let a bridge be built. And he says, okay, I'll support it. Whatever you say, I will do it. So the world is watching that this simple warrior, without any other support, without any other assistance, is no ordinary person. But then the Brahmastra already is invoked. What is to be done with that? So he says, okay, at the north of my territory, there are some demoniac people and I don't like their touch. They always come and do their washing and everything in my waters. So send this Astra there. So Valmiki describes how that Astra was dispatched to take care of some unwanted people. In the advent of Lord Krishna, we find that all these people, in one pastime or another, he has defeated them. Krishna made Lord Brahma go into illusion. Lord Krishna defeated Lord Shiva in a battle, in an actual battle. Lord Shiva had a devotee called Baan. Baan means an arrow. But this was Baanasur with 1,000 arms. With 1,000 arms, he could pulverize a mountain, attack people. He had no enemies whom he had not defeated. So one day with his 1,000 arms, as Lord Shiva was dancing on his, doing his famous Tandav Nitya, he played drums. Of course, with 2 arms you can play nicely, but with 1,000 arms it's a much more concerted effort. So Lord Shiva was very pleased. He said, do you want something? He said, these 1,000 arms are itching for activity. There is no one to fight, my Lord, since I have defeated almost everybody here. So the Acharyas are explaining that. That means this rascal was also trying to defeat Lord Shiva one day. Just see his words, that since there is nobody who is not defeated by me, he had dared not attack Lord Shiva before, but now getting boons from him, he can. That's the nature of an asura. You can't depend on them. They can never be trusted to their word. So he said, you fool, kumati, Very soon you will get your match. He said, oh, really? And then through a very magical sequence of events, his daughter falls in love with Pradyumna's son, Aniruddha. And she sees him in a dream. So she asks one of her friends, her friend Chitraleka, she's an expert, Chitra Lekha, in drawings. So she drew pictures of so many famous personalities. And as she came to the Yadu dynasty, then Lord Krishna, then Pradyumna, and finally Aniruddha, and Banasu's daughter Usha, she lowered her head. So Chitraleka knew that he is the one. So she kidnapped him from Dwarka, brought him to Usha's palace. And since they were already feeling that we are made for each other, they were enjoying each other's company. And no male was permitted inside. So seeing her demeanor, seeing her appearance, her servants, assistants were very concerned. So they told Banasur that we don't think your daughter is innocent anymore. Something wrong is going on here. So although it was a demon's palace and all kinds of things were going on, this was still too much. So when Banasur came, he couldn't believe his eyes that a young man is just sitting in front of me with my young daughter as if he owns this place. But at the same time, he realized he's very beautiful and handsome. He looks from a very good family. But still, he came to his senses and said, "Who are you?" So Aniruddha introduced himself. And Banasur flew into such rage. He attacked him. He bound him, although he is Lord Krishna's grandson and could not be bound. Just for the sake of the future Leela, it was allowed. Meanwhile, Balaram, Satyaki, all the big Yadu generals, they amassed a big army and they came to the gates of Shonikpur, Banasur's capital city. And they began attacking it. And suddenly Banasur realized that, wait for a moment, this is the moment I was waiting for. That some activity started now, some people have come to fight. So Banasur was engaged with Satyaki, and all the Yadu generals were fighting with others. And Banasur didn't forget to worship Lord Shiva and said, "Please, today is the big day. You have to help me." So Lord Shiva came in battle, knowing fully well that whom he'll be facing? Lord Krishna himself directly. Now, how can we imagine Lord Krishna fighting Lord Shiva? Actually fighting, not a drama or something. But Lord Shiva thought that let this be an opportunity for everybody to know the glories of Lord Krishna. So Krishna began to fight. Lord Balaram was fighting. Satyaki was fighting with Bana. But when Bana saw that in front of Lord Krishna and Balaram, within no time the whole thing is going to be annihilated, he came before Lord Shiva and said, "Please do something." So many times when you can't do things in a straight way, you have to do things in a tangential way. So there was this demigoddess, Kotara. And she came before Lord Krishna. She was a hideous looking demoness. She wore no clothes. Her hair was scattered. So as she appeared, Lord Krishna just said, "Oh." He just looked in the other direction. Grasping that moment, Banasur fled away, back to his city. And he was just licking his wounds as to what is to be done now. And meanwhile, the stage was set for Lord Krishna and Shiva to actually battle it out. So the Bhagavatam describes how a Vayu Astra, an air weapon, not just the air weapon in sense, today we say, how can we have air weapon? We say that's just empty air. No, it's like a very powerful arrow, but which is made of air. So it is stopped with a parvat weapon. A mountain comes in between and stopped, neutralized. A water weapon stopped by a fire weapon. So all these elements were used by Lord Krishna, and everybody was just wonderstruck watching this. And finally, just in between, Lord Krishna, just to add some twist to this, he sent a yawning weapon. And even a temporary yawn, a yawn is a very mysterious thing. You don't know what actually happens to you. It is contagious, no doubt. Check how many times you see somebody yawning and it comes to you. But it certainly puts you off balance. You forget what you are doing. Students who study long nights, you find, what was that? I read 3 pages, but nothing went inside. So Lord Shiva was temporarily put off balance. But then he retaliated with the Shiva Jwara. A very strange looking weapon with 3 heads and 9 hands. And which was very hot. So Lord Krishna counteracted that with his Narayan weapon, which was very cold. So much so that this Shiva Jwara took shelter of Lord Krishna. And said, I'm sorry, I was sent by my master, but I don't like this job. This is not my propensity to harm you. So Lord Shiva also is happy when he sees that he accepts defeat, he goes back. And he's happy that in this war I was defeated by Lord Krishna, although it is a serious war. So Indra is defeated, Brahma is defeated, Lord Shiva is defeated. All the great, great personalities whom we think are great in Krishna Leela are all defeated by very, very uncommon activities. Again, what Prabhupada is saying here, no one can understand. Yamaraj is telling his servants that just stick to this point that no one can really understand. The point is not to understand. The point is to either be a devotee and understand that you are a devotee, or not understand that you are a devotee and have all kinds of complications in your life. Similarly, we find in the life of, in the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same as it is said in the Bhagavatam, Shiva Virinchi Nutam Sharanyam Dheyam Sada Paribhavabnam Abhishtadoham Tirthaspadam Shiva Virinchi Nutam Sharanyam. Shiva Virinchi Nutam, Lord Shiva and Brahma, they accepted defeat. They offered prayers in Krishna Leela. Lord Shiva and Brahma in Chaitanya Leela, Lord Shiva is Advaita Acharya, the original form of Sadashiv. And Brahma is Haridas, Thakur Haridas. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I was just trying to find out, do some research on common activities, but which look like uncommon. So Vrindavan Das Thakur describes in the chapter entitled, Lord Nimai wanders through Navadvip. He's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time. He's not a Virakta Sannyasi. He is a beautiful, handsome looking, very young scholar. And his father doesn't have much money, but he has buddhi, he has intelligence. So Nimai would just go, just like Lord Krishna would go in Mathura to various residents. Nimai once went to a weaver, a cloth weaver. And the cloth weaver was amazed to look at him, just happy to see him. Could you give me your best cloth? He said, oh yes, yes. And he went inside, carefully got out some cloth and said, you take it, you wear it. And Nimai would wear that extremely fine silken dhoti. You find in these pictures, nicely folded and with a nice uttariya. And he would walk in the on the streets of Navadvip. People would feel as if Kamadev himself is wandering about. He would go to a house of a milkman, and somehow the milkman's family, they would call him uncle. Uncle, you have come. Please come. He said, what do you have here? Do you have some milk, butter, cream? He said, yes. And they would bring out their finest milk products. He would taste them with relish. It's not like he had some, like people have cards, plastic money, so they don't have to pay anywhere. No. Nimai would, he would enchant the minds of these people so much that automatically the desire would come to offer the best. He came to the shop of a perfumer, Attarwala, and he said, here is the best perfume. Take it. Use it. But he said, you know for certain, I don't have any money. He said, money no problem. Aaj udhar, kal nakad. Like some shopkeepers say, only God credit, everybody pays cash. Of course, if you take the word credit in the sense that you give credit to God, that means whatever is done by the mercy of God, that is the right meaning of the word credit. But here, the different shopkeepers of Navadvip would actually be feeling blessed that he has come. Then he came to the shop of a panwala, a betel nut seller. And he said, I'll make the best for you. So with the finest of spices, camphor, and he would fold it in a very nice way and said, here, please accept this. In this way, just like a common person, but charming the hearts, minds of all his shopkeepers, once he arrived at the home of an astrologer, and he said, dear astrologer, just see my palm and could you tell me what, you know, is best for me or what is my future? This astrologer was a devotee of Krishna, as most good astrologers should be and are. He chanted his Gopal mantra and he looked at the palm. He closed his eyes. Suddenly he saw the beauty of Lord Krishna and gopis, and they are dancing. Krishna is playing his flute and he's saying, doesn't happen like that. Normally when I see somebody's palm and I pray to my Ishtadev and all kinds of nasty things come. In the sense, what's going to happen, what this fellow has to undergo. And I just try to make it a nice job of telling him. Like Prabhupada once, somebody thought that Prabhupada also knows astrology. So he says, Swamiji, can you read my palm? And Prabhupada looked at him and said, very bad. Birth, old age, disease and death. But this astrologer, when he saw again, saw in a sense, he closed his eyes to see. He saw a young naked boy, a child, running around here and there in a pasture-like surrounding, his small palm filled with creamy butter. And he said, oh, what's happening? He again closed his eyes. Shri Radha Gopinath ji ki. Now he saw Jagannath, Balram and Subhadra Devi. Then he saw Narasimha Dev. Then he saw Lord Ramchandra. He saw Matsyavatar. He thought, is this a demigod? Or is this person so powerful that with his mantras, he can bring all his incarnations in my mind? Or is he some kind of powerful astrologer trying to defeat my position here? Like you have one powerful shopkeeper and another big person comes and he knows that now it's quits. You can't compete with this person. So is he some other kind of powerful astrologer who has come to just to defeat me? So Nimai asks him, say something, I came here to take your services. He said, not now. You go home and come later. He said, what's the problem? I will compose myself. I'll try to understand clearly what exactly this thing is. So Nimai just charmingly smiles and goes back. Now all these people, they're not ordinary mortals. They're all blessed. In fact, just like with every major incarnation or with the advent of every big acharya, his assistants also come. But the classic one, Lord Nimai, would reserve for one extraordinary devotee. Going to these different sellers for getting things from them was like good, but the best of the thing was reserved for one poor banana seller, Sridhar. His house was not on the main street. He was staying somewhere on the bank of the Ganga, in a small hut, dilapidated, not very good looking. Somehow a roof-like structure would be there on, with more holes. He had clothes which neither would fit him properly nor were proper. They also had so many patches. So Nimai would go to him and say, Sridhar, why don't you worship Chandi? See, these people are now just starting their own big worship ceremony. Like even in trains, you have this sticker sometimes. Nava Chandi Yagya or Shata Chandi Yagya, whatever. Like, come there, entrance is so much and you can, all your desires are fulfilled. So Sridhar would actually argue with Nimai and said, he would say, what do you mean? These clothes are, they fit me, whatever. And I'm not starving. I get something to eat. What makes you think that a king in his palace is more happy than me? He also has his anxieties. I worship Ganga Devi. I make these leaf cups. I have radishes. I have squash growing on my roof. And that's good enough for me. He said, okay, this particular cup I'm going to take from you. And I'm not going to give you any money for it. So Sridhar would say, look, why do you do these things to me? You know, what satisfaction you get by cheating a Brahmana? He said, you are no Brahmana. You are a very rich person. You have opulence which nobody knows and you have hidden it somewhere very nicely. He said, Nimai, what makes you think I am opulent? Look at me, anybody will call me opulent? I said, yes. So, we will talk about that later. First of all, I think this price is too much. So, for almost an hour, it would be bargaining about the price. Then he would swipe something, like take it and not pay for it. Sridhar would know that, well, what about that? Then Lord Chaitanya would ask him, you worship Ganga. Do you know that she emanates from my lotus feet? Now he would say, Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu. There is one thing which is troublesome is to hear your haggling, bargaining every day. But then you are a Brahmana's son and why do you lose your culture by saying like this? But every day, whatever Lord Chaitanya would drink at his home, all the leaf cups would be from Sridhar's house. Any new squash, pumpkin which would grow on his roof, that would be straight be brought to Mother Shachi's kitchen for some sweet rice to be prepared from it. And after every such occasion when Lord Chaitanya would go away, Sridhar would feel in his heart, I don't know what kind of unknown happiness comes when Nimai comes and argues with me like this. I am spellbound. I can't retaliate. I can't give him anything I can't give him any answer. But somehow, I feel so happy. Of course, in the Mahaprakash Leela, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed what is that opulence which Sridhar had. That he refused even entrance into Vaikuntha. He said, no, I don't want that. Not just mukti, not just the highest mukti. He said, then what do you want? Let this naughty son of Jagannath Mishra come to my humble dwelling every day and argue with me. That's what I want. So this is the true nature of these uncommon activities which Lord does. In one sense, the creation is like a Western concert. I don't know how many of you have seen it, but generally, a big concert begins with total darkness. All the instruments, all the musicians, players, singers, choir, they're all present. And everybody knows that something's going to happen now. So in the Bhagavatam, it is described that the earth element was created. Earth, fire, water, air, ether, mind, intelligence, all their respective demigods, people in charge of respective departments, they were all there. But the golden egg, the Brahmanda, the Virat Purusha, he didn't move. The Virat Purusha, the soul of all souls. If he doesn't move, nobody moves. So what is to be done? If these people are all powerful, why can't they make something happen? They can't. And a tiny spotlight shines on the stage. And everybody is seeing, what's happening? Who's come here? And they see a person, one man. He has a wand in his hand. All he does is slowly starts moving his hand. And to everybody's surprise, everybody means those who are not known, those who are not knowing that this is how things take place. He begins one particular movement of a particular piece of instrument. And then he begins another one. Then he begins another one. Then he, as he goes on showing his hands in all directions, after some time there is full floodlight everywhere. And at one point of time, he's like vigorously making everybody sing or whatever. And if he says, shh, and that particular thing stops. Of course, the major fault in this analogy when we use with Lord Krishna is that this particular conductor, sometimes he doesn't know to play these instruments. He can't sing like all these singers. Certainly, he's not the original source of all these instruments. But Lord Krishna is. As the super soul, he's the conductor of everything. Not only he has made the ingredients, not only he knows how everything. So in one sense, all these demigods which Yamaraj is mentioning, we can say that these demigods are like Krishna also is a... Krishna also does all the function of demigods. Doesn't mean he is a demigod. When we say Krishna is Indra, that means without Krishna's power, Indra can't do anything. Krishna is Lakshmi. Krishna is Saraswati. Krishna is Shiva. Why say Varsa? When they say, my Lord, there is no difference between you and me, doesn't mean you and me are one. But I am not independent of you. So Yamaraj is very honestly, like one specialty of an honest person is, or rather, as one American novelist said, if you tell the truth once, you don't need to remember what you have said. If you lie, you have to really remember what you said. Now, it's a very simplistic observation, but this is one fault in Mayavadi teachings. If they say that, well, Jiva Brahma Aikya, they are both one. Well, they are one in this sense. But that sense, they are not one. But that's not that way to be understood. It should be understood this way. So many things you have to go on revolving just to make sure that the other party gets confused. That's the aim of it. As once some devotees told Prabhupada that this particular person, very popular, very so-called preacher in India of Vedanta, I read through that text, I couldn't understand anything. Prabhupada said, that means you are a devotee. Yeah. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, he has his seminar on challenging Mayavad philosophy. And the first day's assignment is, or before you come to that seminar, you have to read a particular text of 5 pages. And then he asks people, does it make sense? How many understood it? And somebody says, I understood it. He says, you have problems. If you think you can understand Mayavad, you are in a soup. Big problem. Because it is based on negating one thing, affirmating it the later, again denying it, again partially qualifying it, then again denying it altogether, then fully accepting it under certain situations, and then saying that this whole thing doesn't make any meaning because the whole world doesn't make any meaning altogether. So if life doesn't make any meaning, as one philosopher put it, Prabhupada said, so you have to write 7 fat books to explain that? You can just write 1 sentence that life has no meaning. But why should we feel life has no meaning from your point of view? So life does have meaning, especially when I describe it as having no meaning. And that's the ego, that's the arrogance. So here we have the brilliant example of a Mahajan. Yamaraj is a Mahajan. Prabhupada calls Yamaraj a GBC. He is. GBC duties, putting fires every day, not a moment's rest. And here comes a very special day in office when suddenly your main assistants, they come, you close the office door, they check that nobody else is there, and they say, please tell us the truth. Who is the boss? We feel proud that we are servants of someone whose orders cannot be thwarted by anyone. People tremble when they hear our name. If they see somebody hideous, they call him Yamadut. And we like that. Yes. Like previously, it was said that one particular famous Hindi film villain, in one of his interviews at the fag end of his career, he said, my achievement is that in the last 30 years, not a single child is named after me. That's my glory. So, yeah, it's a fact. In Germany, hardly anybody is called Adolf as his birth name. Now, don't ask why. But far from, just imagine if somebody asks you, are you the head of the department here? No, but I will help you. I'm so happy you asked me, as I'm the head of the department. What can I do for you? It feels good if somebody feels that you are much better, superior than what you look like. But the test of a pure devotee, a Mahajan, is this. That when the real thing comes up, my Lord, please tell me, is there anyone above you? Rather than telling his order carriers that, well, there is no one, or sometimes, and what happened, tell me, can I help you? He grasps this opportunity that this is the time to do some Harikatha. Although it's like, what if we have Harinam Sankirtan in Nariman Point? A very incongruous kind of thing, right? Passionate business going on and suddenly there are devotees chanting. So all these kind of passionate business. Passionate doesn't mean bad. But what does Yamaraj's office may look like? You know, Chitragupta writing all day, records. All sins, misdemeanors, dispatches for various hells, and new hells to be constructed. Yeah, because if new ways of sinning are invented by the fertile minds of demons, then new hells have to be made to see to it that those kind of things are properly dealt with. And all these administrative burden, a rare chance to do some Harikatha. And Yamaraj is not going to lose that. So not only he feels happy, he feels delighted. So this is a lesson for all those who, even in the responsibility of management or the burden of administrative duties, there is no harm in saying that I am not the main person here. I am not the big boss. In fact, there is glory. There is honor and there is truth. So that's what he does when he says that not to speak of we who never really go in the lower modes of passion and ignorance, although we are in the mode of goodness, we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is to be said of others who, under illusion, merely speculate to know God? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections? Question? Please pass on the mic there.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you for a very nice class. Prabhuji, many places in Srimad Bhagavatam, we find Varun Dev being addressed as Pracheta, as here also. He is one of the Prachetas, or there is some connection?
To tell you the truth, since this verse is about telling your exact knowledge, I also couldn't understand that. Because when I made the query, Varuna, in few places I found the word Pracheta. Now we know that Prachetas are those sages, the sons of a sage who did their tapasya underwater. So obviously that connection could be there. But apart from that, I don't know whether Varuna is a Pracheta. Anyone in this assembly knows? Could be one of those details which Prabhupada didn't find it important to gloss over. Any other question? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki.